This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. September is World Alzheimer's Month, and that's an annual international campaign to raise awareness and to challenge the stigma around dementia. And this year, the campaign aims to shine a light on the warning signs of dementia and to encourage people to seek out information, advice, and support if it's either themselves or their loved ones who has been diagnosed with it. So in line with that, today we want to take a look at how a dementia diagnosis affects not just the individual themselves, but the relationships within a family unit, especially when, you know, most often it's family members who have to take on the role of caregivers and how it changes that dynamic. So I have two guests joining me today via Zoom, Dr. Koh Hui Min, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center. And interestingly, I'm really looking forward to hearing his thoughts, Daryl Koh, an author of a recently published book called Mistbound, and I'm sure he'll tell us a little bit more about it later. But first, how are the both of you today?
Very well, thank you.
Very good, thanks.
Thank you so much for your time. So Dr. Koh, it's World Alzheimer's Month, as I said, but you know, the campaign does focus on dementia as a whole, not just Alzheimer's. Perhaps you could give us a primer to explain Alzheimer's and then the broader umbrella of dementia.
So dementia, like you've mentioned, it's a broad term. So it actually describes the deterioration of a person's cognitive function. And that would include a person's memory, their thinking, their judgment, language skills, as well as their behavior and personality. So all these changes actually interferes with their day-to-day lives. So there are many causes to dementia, and Alzheimer's disease is the commonest cause worldwide. And the most prominent feature of Alzheimer's disease is memory impairment.
But generally, do we know what causes these changes to take place in the brain?
There have been many research done about, you know, the causes of dementia and why Alzheimer's disease occur. And that has to do with a lot of abnormal buildup of proteins in the brain that causes accelerated neuronal damage and cell death. So that's basically, at a nutshell, what dementia is. And of course, there's many things that can actually cause this abnormal buildup of proteins. Yeah.
So then, you know, since we're talking about sort of the different types, Daryl, I understand that your late father was diagnosed with vascular dementia following a stroke. Now, how did that diagnosis come about? You know, how was it recognized? And, you know, were you and your family actually aware that dementia could follow on from a stroke?
Yeah, great question. No, we didn't. He actually had two strokes. The first one was mild. He was still himself. Everything was normal. And then it was his second stroke that was more major, and it caused him to be semi-paralyzed, but also affected him mentally. I was in Singapore at the time. I flew down as soon as I could. And then when I came back, I found my dad in hospital, bedridden and in a state of delirium. So he was delirious, disoriented, and speaking, you know, basically talking gibberish. It was a complete shock for me. So one day he was his normal self, and suddenly the next day he was basically gone. So unlike, I guess, maybe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, but with Alzheimer's, it's a bit more gradual. While with this one, it was actually the vascular dementia. It came about because of the stroke, you know, and the blood, I guess, there's restriction in blood supply or food and nutrition that causes cell death. And that's what, you know, with the brain cells dying, that's what caused the vascular dementia. And we didn't actually get a diagnosis that it was vascular dementia until actually years down the road. It was basically, we knew it as a stroke, and that it was a stroke that then mentally affected him, but we didn't exactly know. I suspected through my self-research, but then later on we got a neurologist report, and then that's when it was confirmed.
Dr. Koh, anything you want to add to that? And also, I guess, you know, how important is it for the individual and family members to be able to recognize that there was an onset of vascular dementia? It's not just what you'd typically expect from a stroke.
Yeah, I think Daryl is right, you know. So because Alzheimer's disease is a gradual deterioration of your brain function. And sometimes patients or relatives may not even are able to tell exactly when it started. But with vascular dementia, it usually comes after a stroke. And initially, because there's so much changes in the brain, you know, the person may talk slower, there may be a lot of acute confusion going on. But after a long time, when these changes does not actually improve, then you would be suspicious that there may be a process of dementia going on. Yeah, sometimes it takes some time before family members recognize that, you know, besides the physical change after a stroke, there can be mental changes that occurs with it as well.
Are there tests that could help to sort of recognize it earlier?
Usually, what happens after a stroke, it's important to go for your regular follow-ups so that the doctor can assess and see if these changes improve. Because if it improves, then it's likely that the person has what we call a delirious state to the acute stroke. But if the changes persist, and when we take a history and examine the patient, as well as do what we call cognitive testing, and we can then tell that, you know, there are changes to this person's cognition, that actually is not just about a physical aspect to it, but as well as a cognitive aspect to it. Yeah. And also understanding the ability of a person to understand instruction that may have changed more than their physical impairment. So it means that, you know, it's not as though they can't do it because there's a physical impairment, but there's a cognitive aspect to inability to do it itself.
All right. And how common is it following a stroke?
I have to say that it also depends on the size of the stroke. There are many times when patients who get a large stroke that is commoner in causing cognitive decline. But there again, there are people who have mild strokes. And if they don't look after their, what we call vascular risk factors, for example, their blood pressure, their diabetes and their cholesterol, they are at higher risk of developing dementia in the future.
And Daryl, how did it then progress for your father?
Well, he was, it was, we focused on the stroke at first. And because, you know, that was the most immediate symptom where he couldn't walk. And then we were trying to treat that first. With my sister and I being in Singapore, we actually couldn't really help out with day-to-day caregiving. And my mom wasn't able to take care of my dad because, well, he was mentally not there, but also physically not able to move independently. So coming home was not an option. Staying in the hospital was not an option because expenses were racking up by the day. So we had to put him in basically an old folks home where there were people to take care of him medically and also carry him from place to place. So once housing was settled, the next thing for us was with physical rehab. So we signed him up for classes for therapy at NASAM, the National Stroke Association of Malaysia. And I guess gradually, maybe a month or so, mentally he started improving as well, especially once we brought him home. I think maybe being in a familiar setting, his mental cognitive abilities improved quite steadily, and then it stopped at a point after that.
Actually, that's a good point, right, Dr. Kaur? And I guess for those who are not or who are newly initiated into this idea of what dementia is, you tend to think of a decline all the way. But how can that progression actually look like? Can there be improvement?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of stigma to the diagnosis of dementia. You know, people tend to think of them being, you know, unaware of their surroundings, that they can't recognize family members or being unable to function independently in the society. But actually, there are many stages to the illness itself. And many times in just the initial or in mild stages, the person can still are aware of the changes that they're having, you know, and sometimes it causes a lot of frustration because they're unable to voice out their thoughts and, you know, they get very frustrated in doing things where previously it used to be effortless. So they have to pay a bit more attention to do the same kind of things. So yeah, that's how we see it. So don't think of dementia as, you know, as the late stages. You know, there's lots of a big spectrum to the disease itself.
Daryl, did your father, experience those kinds of emotions, and how did he cope with that frustration that Dr. Kaur talked about?
Yeah, definitely. He definitely did have a lot of episodes. So I called it like bad weather days, good weather and bad weather. And there were things, for example, like the TV set, you know, he would basically be yelling at us to turn off the TV or close the curtain. But for example, the TV was never on in the first place. And then we didn't know how to deal with it. At first, we used to just contradict him and tell him, that no, it's never on, it's not on. And we end up getting a shouting match because he would think he's right, we know we are right, but then we didn't realize that he's in a different state of mind and that it actually does more damage to just try and so-called convince him using logic. And we actually have to understand and just say, yeah, and accept his reality, that it's a different state of reality. And I guess one line in my book is that sometimes the best way to move someone is not to push him, but to walk alongside him.
That's such a great example, Daryl. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think that really helps us to understand, number one, what their state of mind is, right? And what is truth or reality to us is not necessarily reality to them. Dr. Kaur, you want to add to that?
I mean, it's exactly what I tell family members as well. You know, what they think is happening is what they think is happening. You know, to avoid confrontation or avoid correcting them all the time, because they won't understand why what they think is correct is not right in your eyes. So sometimes that comes into a lot of arguments. So it's best to put yourself in their shoes and maybe help to see things from their perspectives. You know, there's a lot of gaps in their memory or cognitive function. And, you know, our job is to hopefully help fill in these gaps so that it's easier for them to continue functioning in their best ability.
And since Daryl brought up his book, let's go for a quick break and then come back and find out exactly what his book is about. And I think by understanding, you know, what is the story he's trying to tell, we can continue the discussion as well about how a diagnosis of dementia sort of affects sort of the family relationships, but also your identity as, in terms of who you are to the person with dementia. You know, that journey. I'm speaking today to Dr. Kaur Hui Min, consultant geriatrician from University of Malaya Medical Center, and Daryl Kaur, author of a book called Mistbound, which is his way of dealing with his late father's vascular dementia, and his role as a caregiver in conjunction with World Alzheimer's Month this September. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik, and my guest, Daryl Kaur, author of a book called Mistbound, and sharing today about his role as caregiver to his late father who had dementia. And also my other guest, Dr. Kaur Hui Min, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center. As you can guess, we are discussing dementia in conjunction with World Alzheimer's Month this September, which is aiming this year to shine a light on the warning signs of dementia to encourage people and their family members to seek out information, advice, and support to really get through this journey, these what can be very challenging times for everyone. So Daryl has published a book called Mistbound, and it's, I think, a really interesting take on, how family members, or rather how dementia affects family members. But perhaps, Daryl, you'll be the best person to explain what this book is about and what you were trying to tell through it.
Sure. So there's the full name is Mistbound, How to Glue Back Grandpa. It was published in July by Penguin Books and supported by two non-profit organizations in Singapore, Dementia Singapore, as well as Touch Community Services. What's about? It's about a young girl named Alexis whose grandfather's memories have been shattered by a terrible spell. The only thing that can put them back together again is a potion called memory glue. But to make memory glue, she needs to gather 8 magical ingredients, which can't be found in the normal world. You can't find it in Jaya Grocer. You can't find it in Aeon Big. Yet she actually has to travel to a parallel fairyland called Mist. It's a world filled with mythical monsters from around Asia. creatures that her grandfather had told her all about in his many folk tales and stories they used to tell her, but then she discovers are actually alive in the flesh, and many of them are actually flesh eating as well. And if that's not enough, she has to do it while racing against time. Otherwise, her memories will be lost forever. Thankfully, she's not alone. She's doing this quest together with her grandmother, her strict no-nonsense grandmother, who she learns there's a lot more to her than she actually expected at the first place. So it's a fairy tale, but it's actually one that's based on a true story. My family's story inspired by my family's experience with dementia, which my father suffered and then eventually passed away from. But ultimately, it's a love story, except that this time it's between a grandchild and her grandparents.
So what are the elements of that story that parallel your family's experience with your father's dementia?
Well, how it came about was that my dad had his stroke and had his vascular dementia. It was only just three months before my daughter was born. And so he was very much looking forward to it, then suddenly he wasn't there, fully ready. And then for me, the regret was that the two of them never really got to meet because of his dementia. So she came out 3 months after, and then as she grew up, he was always... All she remembers is that he's the sick old man, always watching TV, but that's basically her memories of her. And I didn't want that to be her only memories of grandpa, because the father that I knew was a totally different person from the grandfather that she knew. And so I wanted to bridge that gap. And this story was my way of allowing that meeting to happen, for her to meet him at least on the page. And then have this thing happen where he lost his memories, but then alongside that, have the adventure with her grandmother to save his memories. Because through this journey with my dad being sick, it was my mom who was there for him all this while. So, being the caregiver is really a very tough role, especially with my sister and I being in a different country, so we weren't much help. And so through this journey, I was very inspired and impressed by my mom, her strength and, her love in taking care of my dad. And I wanted to capture that admiration as well. And so this story is basically my tribute to the both of them, to my dad before and then to my mom after what happened to my dad, especially.
I don't know if you can tell, but I'm tearing up.
Oh my gosh. Sorry.
No, it's just very moving. And I think, Dr. Kaur, that must be such a huge part of perhaps a conversation that doesn't really take place very much. I don't know. From your perspective, can you share how much family members are aware of, from the time of that diagnosis, how can they prepare themselves for this loss of identity that's going to unfold?
Yeah, I think in many instances, let's say, for example, in the healthcare setting, in the clinics where you see a patient and you talk to them about that diagnosis, but many times you need a long time to actually explore what is happening at home and also to identify what burdens the caregiver may have. And we like to say that most of the time when we run our memory clinic, it's a lot for the caregivers itself, because you have to maintain their well-being and understand what challenges they have so that they can look after the persons living with dementia. Many caregivers do experience challenges, and there is a lot of role changes along to it as well. Because, for example, for a spouse looking after their husband now, where initially they used to be their sidekick, but, it's like looking after an adult at the moment. The same with children as well. So they have this role reversal, but as of now, they're looking like parenting a parent itself.
So does the memory clinic that UM is running, for instance, can it encompass and sort of hold people's hands as they go through their journey?
We try to, but you see, it's not enough, definitely, because at most we can see the caregiver and the patient for example, 45 minutes each session. So it definitely isn't enough, because there's a lot more that we need to go through. We hope that Malaysia will soon have its national dementia plan that, how do we integrate persons living with dementia into our society itself to provide more support to caregivers as well as to the persons living with dementia. Because like I say, there is a lot more that they can do. It's just that, you know, sometimes the services around them does not cater to their needs. And hence, a lot of times they stop doing what they are already doing. So it's important to get them to participate, even in the kind of changes in the role, you know, but the participation is important.
Okay, so what might some of these activities look like?
So, for example, having them to be connected to the society, you know, even getting them to provide services for other people. So, for example, you've seen in Japan, they have a restaurant that caters persons living with dementia as persons who serve the food and, you know, to allow the public to understand what a person living with dementia is and not to just think of them with a negative stigma behind it itself. And also have places where it's dementia friendly. So for example, in the Asia complex itself, they do have an area where they cater for persons living with dementia that, you know, if you're going to have to go and get something, you know, your loved ones can actually go to the center and spend some time there to do activities with people who are trained to assist persons living with dementia. So at least in the complex itself, you know, even the security guards are trained to identify if a person looks lost and, you know, they're elderly, you know, when you ask them, they can't tell you much about themselves, then to identify that this is a condition like dementia. Yeah, so it takes the whole society to support these people.
Daryl, from your perspective, what would you have liked to see for your dad, or what do you think he would have liked in the context of that kind of support that Dr. Kaur was talking about?
Wow, that's fantastic, the thing that Atria has. What I realized through my experience with my dad is that really old age is like the second childhood. You know, it really is. So, for example, when you're babies, you are in prams. And then when you're older, you are in wheelchairs. So there's so many parallels. I wear diapers also in both cases. So one thing that occurred to me was like, there are Toys R Us and Baby R Us for kids. Why aren't there a Toys R Us for elderly people? You know, that's something I had issue with, because one big challenge I had was how to keep my dad stimulated mentally when he was, you know, suffering from his dementia. Because the only thing, honestly, at the time we just knew how to do, just put him in front of a TV screen. And as, you know, we only realized later on that there are other ways to do it and to stimulate his senses. But, you know, I wish there was something like a store, like a Toys R Us for elderly, where they sell things like hand-eye coordination games, you know, puzzles, activity books like Pin by Numbers or Connect the Dots. Even fashionable walking sticks, you know, like why can't they have fashionable walking sticks with like glow in the dark or sticks with umbrellas or like, you know, a different range of electric wheelchairs, you know, why do they wheelchairs have to be so boring? But yeah, things like that.
What do you think, Dr. Kaur? Let's do it. That's a business model right there.
Yeah, that's right. What we would say, like just coming back to what Daryl mentioned about, you know, sometimes older person looks as though they're going through their second childhood. When a person has dementia, there is a regression to their ability to do things. So some of the methods of what we use to entertain a child may help, you know, like sensory stimulation. But one thing very important that we need to inform family members or even the public as a whole, that an older person who has dementia is not becoming like a child. You know, these methods work, but we should not childlike them. You know, they still do have the identity that we need to uphold and maintain them with respect and also make sure that that dignity is being upheld. Yeah, but definitely we do lack, you know, things that we can do with the person living with dementia. So, you know, sometimes it just boils down to like doing colouring at home, you know, doing these Sudoku and stuff like that. But I think there are a lot more to it. So, for example, in a lot of dementia daycare centres, you know, they come up with different activities that they can do to stimulate their mind.
What are some of these that perhaps families can modify and do at home, especially during this pandemic, right? A lot of the daycare centres are still, as of now, closed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what we can do is, number one, try and maintain their daily routine. So for example, you know, this is what they do every day, try and simulate and maintain it. But at the same time, in their routine, we need to incorporate activities inside. Otherwise, you know, the whole day will be just sitting around. So for example, things that you can do, if they are someone who likes gardening, you know, if they can't go to the garden, you know, bring some little pots in front of them and do certain things with them. If they do like painting, do it together with them. So the aim is actually having someone to sit together with them and do it together, not just giving them homework and you walk away. Because I can tell you, they won't do it, you see. Yeah. So music does help, you know, playing songs that they like, and even going through photo albums and, you know, talking to them through the people that they see on the photos, and also talking about important events. So it's basically just spending that time knowing that, you know, this is the time I'm going to spend with my loved ones. And, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, you know, what we do, but it's just that interaction that needs to happen.
Oh, that's a great point. You know, I'm thinking also, what if the person was actually really, I don't know, a successful person in their own right, right? Really participating in perhaps professional work of some form as well. And then I guess in my mind, switching to something like gardening and these stimulating activities, as important as they are, it must be so difficult. How do we balance that?
Yeah, so it's important to know that, you know, not all activities are suitable for every person. So like what you've mentioned, you know, they will be someone who has very high level of cognitive function before. So you need to make sure that the activities that you do with them meets at least that level. So thinking about what they used to like to do before and see whether you can simulate it, even if, you know, their level of participation may change, but, you know, still to do things like that. Yeah, so certain things like, you know, some may like to talk about things that's happening in the world, you know, they like to discuss about issues, about economy. So you do have that discussion with them. You can open up the papers and talk to them about it. So to make sure that you are aware of who they are and not bring their level down to, like, you know, just coloring, you know, or simple things that they may not have enjoyed before.
All right. And, you know, Daryl, there's so much on the caregiver now at this period. Did you, your sister and your mom have enough support, honestly?
It was tough. We tried to be there. I think at the first part, when the stroke happened to my dad, one thing I really appreciated was that my employer was very understanding, and they actually let me work out of KL for a couple of months to help get my dad settled. I think that was very much appreciated and very valuable. And then once my dad was able to walk again, and then it became kind of autopilot for my mom, and we also managed to get a domestic maid. That really helped. And we also signed my dad up. Once we knew it was dementia, we signed him up for the ADFM, the daycare classes that Dr. Call was talking about. Those were actually really good because, yeah, it was time off. Sorry, it was time away from the TV for my father. It was, you know, basically for he could get engaged, he could be occupied. While at the same time, just as importantly, it was time off for my mother as well from caregiving. Yeah, that was really important.
Is there anything that you'd like to see improved for caregivers?
I think things like that Toys R Us I spoke about, that would be helpful. But I think the classes that they have, the ADFM, those are really good, teaching you how to be a caregiver, but also how to take care of yourselves. I think it's important for caregivers to remember to take care of themselves as well, not just the patient. And in fact, caregivers have a higher percentage of getting dementia themselves, mainly because in taking care of their you know, persons with dementia, the PWD, they forget to take care of themselves. I think that's one thing that they need to be reminded very much as well.
you know, Dr. Kaur, Daryl mentioned having domestic help. And I think that's a big gap in Malaysia in terms of care provision, where we rely on very informal form of care, foreign domestic workers. How can that be improved?
Well, I think we need to understand that caregiving can be a profession. You know, caregiving is not only for people who did not successfully get a diploma or something like that. You know, so recognizing that, so that more local, graduates can consider taking up caregiver as a job itself. You know, even for temporary measures. And I think the other thing that we may be lacking is sometimes we lack care managers. So many times when a person is being discharged, we say, oh, okay, that's it, you are discharged. But no one actually sits down and tell them what they need to expect, as in like the amount of care that is required and what do they need and where do they find resources. So what I've heard from some of the caregivers that I know of, they tell me that, you know, the best resource that they could get is from other caregivers who have gone through a similar journey as well. So I think the support is lacking in the formal sense. And at the same time, we need to change the mindset about caregiving. Yeah,
this reminded me of this app that is around. Where it's kind of like a grab help or something like that, where you can actually book a caregiver to come to your house and then take care of if you don't have a domestic help, for example. And I think that is really, really helpful.
Yeah. And what challenges did you and your family face, Daryl, in navigating, you know, trying to get a good quality help for your mom and your dad?
Wow, there were a lot of challenges, actually. It's really hard to find dependable help. I think that's a whole different conversation in itself, where to get dependable help with agencies, you know, charging arm and a leg, with also help that is unreliable and basically some stolen money ran off and all. So we went through quite a lot of headache on that front as well, but we thankfully landed on what became a real blessing, because we found our my mother's current help at home, who has really become like a second daughter. And she was really a blessing to have her, because my dad loved her. She loved my dad. And she really took better care of him than I'm sure any of my sister or myself could have done. And now she's doing that for my mom. So yeah, we're really thankful to have
her. I think, yeah, that does show that there you do have good human resources out there, right? But you just need to regulate it in a proper sort of structured environment and make it accessible for people. Something like that app, you know, you mentioned, Daryl. Dr. Kaur, if we could just sort of broaden the scope a little bit and touch very briefly on the signs and symptoms that could be red flags for family members or individuals themselves to look out for when it comes to dementia.
Yeah, sure. So the commonest signs are like poor short-term memory. So they tend to forget things that have just happened very recently. But, you know, long-term memory, things that have happened 20 years ago, is still very much they can recall that. So there are other things like, you know, difficulties misplacing their belongings, you know, getting lost in familiar surroundings, or as well as the inability to make complex decisions. So they may lose the ability to do certain tasks that they used to be able to perform very well before. They may have word finding difficulties or even behavioral changes, such as, you know, the lack of motivation or agitation, aggression and things like that. But one have to recognize that all these changes actually does cause an impairment to the person to maintain their day-to-day function. So that's why we call what dementia is. You know, it's not just like, oh, I forgot where I left my keys. Do I have dementia? Not quite like that. Yeah.
And in terms of follow-up after that, you know, if we do recognize these red flags, what should we do?
I think if you do recognize these red flags and you're not quite sure whether this is dementia or not, the first instance is to go and see the general practitioner, you know, talk to a doctor, your family doctor, about your concerns. You know, they can at least do the initial screening. And if they too suspect that there is dementia going on, then they would refer to a tertiary hospital, usually to a specialist to then manage and as well as treat the problem itself.
And from you, Daryl, how have things changed since you wrote your book? You know, for perhaps for your daughter's understanding of her grandfather, or perhaps for yourself in terms of being able to come to terms with what's happened.
Well, actually, when I wrote this book, it wasn't so much to write a book about dementia, or I wasn't trying to do a medical book or talk about tau tangles and all that kind of stuff. Actually, I just wrote this book for my daughter, so that my daughter could have a repository of how grandpa was and how grandma is like. So in a way, it's like a bottle of memories, or a paper bottle, I guess. So I wrote it down my daughter, that my daughter, what my dad was before, and then include bits of his storytelling, his past, and how by losing his memory, that was all taken away. And you know, I also wanted to put scenes of how my dad was like after dementia as well, so she wouldn't forget, because she was a bit too young then when he was around to, you know, really remember how he was like even after. And so I also wanted to paint her the picture of my mom as well. And I guess the metaphor that guided me was this quote that I found, that when an old person dies, a library burns to the ground. And I found that to be a very moving and perfect metaphor, because, you know, really, you know, elders or grandparents are like libraries, living libraries. They are filled with stories, experiences, and wisdom. And then dementia is like the fire that's basically actively burning that library down. It's burning those books. And there's so much lost in when, you know, a grandparent or elder dies and as they're losing their memory. So, you know, it's basically a reminder of how he was, what he became, but also a reminder to readers as well to go and borrow those books from your grandparents' minds before it's too late. And, you know, I wrote it for my daughter about my family, but what I found after that was readers coming to me and telling me that they actually spoke very personally to them as well. They wished they got to know their grandparents when they were younger, before it's too late. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about dementia as well. It's just basically knowing your grandparents while they could. Yeah, and for those who had dementia, they told me like they felt that they were themselves were the hero, and they were Alexis trying to save their grandparents' memories. Yeah, so it's been touching.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's a great sort of message to remember. To really cherish our older adults, right? And not to think of them as just passive members of society, yes, simply because they've reached a certain age. And Dr. Kaur, what do you think? The act of recording something, journaling it, yes, you don't have to be a published author like Daryl, but do something to, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the past, you know, before the era of, you know, internet and Google, many times wisdom is found from the older person. So the older person that has gone through many life experiences is able to tell you what path to take and, you know, what may be right and wrong. But now with internet, you know, whatever information we want, we just go and search the internet. But, you know, there's a lot of, and sometimes we find I don't need to ask my, you know, my dad or my mom or my grandparents anymore, because I know it myself. But then again, there is a lot more hidden in that, you know, they are able to give other types of wisdom rather than whatever you read. So I think spending the time listening to their life stories will definitely help. And like you mentioned, you know, just keeping certain things that that they have, you know, talking about it, you know, using objects as the basis of your conversation will help you to understand even your family tree better.
And a final message from each of you for World Alzheimer's Month, Daryl?
I guess one thing for those who don't have dementia, of course, realize that dementia is becoming more pervasive, especially as society ages, but a lot of it can be prevented. So take care of your own health, your family's health, not just physical, but also mental health. And those who do have persons with dementia, you know, you're not alone. Seek help. There are places like the ADFM. There's like Dr. Call around. But I guess from my message that I wanted to convey, or the gist of my book, is that besides the library metaphor, is that you know with all the funky ingredients for memory glue, despite all those weird ingredients, actually the most important are the bonds of family. And that's my main takeaway, that family is what keeps us glued together. So when my dad was the most sociable person, he was a cigarette salesman, he traveled all over Malaysia, and he could get along with anyone, including like orang asli in the villages, you know. But as he aged and it got, you know, dementia, and also had depression, all these friends, all these acquaintances all gradually disappeared, you know. And in the end, family was all there was left to see him through his, you know, when at his weakest and his worst. And so ultimately, that's my main message now. When all else fades into the mist, you know, all that remains is family.
And Dr. Kaur?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to highlight again that, you know, when a person has dementia, it doesn't mean that they've lost all their mental faculties. You know, like I've mentioned, there are just gaps in their memories and, you know, the cognitive ability. And we can help them fill in these gaps, you know, and they can continue to have meaningful life and relationship with others. So being with the person, you know, understand what they need, and being in their shoes will help us to identify what these gaps are and that we're able to support them throughout the course of their illness.
And I just wanted to mention that in conjunction with World Alzheimer's Month, the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation Malaysia, ADFM, which our guests have been referencing, is running a virtual memory walk as part of their fundraising campaign. So you can sign up as a participant and then you record and submit the number of steps that you take as part of the campaign. And so you can find out more information on that at www.adfm.org.my. I've been speaking to Dr. Kaur Hui Min, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center, and Daryl Koh, an author and a caregiver to his late father with dementia. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.